saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this
world. Through this shit without me falling asleep or you falling asleep or either of us falling asleep.
Yeah.
So how are you, aside from the fact that you're tired and we're tired?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Had a hard weekend, but today's Monday.
Yeah.
So we'll start anew.
How did your class go today?
Oh, it's Tuesdays and Thursdays.
So, oh, I thought your class was today.
No.
Oh, okay.
Tuesdays and Thursdays, but it's actually over tomorrow. And then in 3 weeks, I start my next class.
Oh, and it's on mosaics.
Yes, doing glass mosaics.
Nice. So, yeah. I kind of wish I was getting paid to do something creative like that instead of just clickety-clickety-clickety-click.
This is pro bono, but that's okay.
Oh, they're not even giving you any? They're not throwing any scratch your way?
Nothing.
No scratch. Yep. Wow. Yeah, you're such a good person to do that for free.
Well, it's a trade-off. Yeah.
Well, although it would be different if you were working with, like, say, 15-year-olds.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind high school.
That I don't think I would do for free.
Middle school. Middle schoolers are hard.
Yeah.
I think they're much harder than high schoolers.
I don't know. I just, you know, when I'm in a room full of 15-year-olds, I'm just like, I feel so out of my element and like completely out of my depth.
I'm kind of surprised because you're so hip and
spooky. I'm not, Mimi, I'm not funny.
Yes, you are.
I am not fucking funny to these youngsters.
I don't know why, because I find you hilarious.
And then I always make the mistake of like trying to make jokes that are not specific to their age group.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I do a lot of Mean Girls references because, oh my god, Karen, you can't ask people why they're white. Like, I think it's hilarious. And I keep telling Joanne that her friends at work, her group of friends, they're the plastics.
Uh-huh.
And I have, like, who everybody is. Like, who's a Gretchen and who's a Karen and who's a Regina. And, like, I do that stuff while I'm up in front of the room in front of, like, 15-year-olds. And there's, like, sometimes there's groups of, like, 35, 40 kids.
Uh-huh.
In a pretty small room. And they just, they don't get any of my references. Aww. They don't think I'm funny. Crickets.
So there's
crickets. Just crickets.
Aww.
It's really bad. But, you know, whatever. I mean.
You move on.
You move on. You suck it up. Yeah. I shed a tear later on in the evening.
Gotta watch Rick and Morty.
Right.
Use Rick and Morty references.
Rick and Morty and Steven Universe and. What's the other
Steven
one?
Steven Universe.
There's three of them.
That's too young.
Yeah, you think so?
I think so.
I ran into a girl at the eyeglass place the other day who was like 27. She's like, I love Steven Universe. I was like, I've never even heard of it. And then I looked at it and I was like, yeah, this is like for younger kids, but I don't know.
Oh, I don't think it's for teenagers.
That's
I
like,
don't like it anyway.
What is that Disney movie? It was called Home or something. And it had the little purple monster.
Yeah.
They turned that into a cartoon.
They did.
Yeah, so that's on Netflix. So it has a series on Netflix. And you know, we watched like a few episodes or whatever with Finley and you know, whatever, and that was fine. Finley's my niece, for those of you who are listening. She'll probably never hear this, but hi Finley. You might be 35 when you listen to this. You might run across it on the internet and be like, what the fuck? Anyway, so we tried recording this shit yesterday and then the microphone Saturday. Yesterday was Sunday. Okay. So let me fall through my fucking time warp to figure out what day it is. Smelling toast. Just hang on. Okay. So, I feel like this is a lot better now that we can see each other.
Oh, it is.
Because before, it was like...
Straining our necks. Going from
Are you still over there? I can't see you. Yeah, it was good.
Am I talking to a human?
Good decision. Yep.
This is so much nicer.
Yeah, it is really nice. We've done away with the boxes, the sound boxes, that the wifey made for me. So I've just kind of set them up now, kind of like in a wind tunnel kind of set up, so that, you know, they're kind of winged, so you can expand them a little bit and stand them up on their sides. But yeah, I'm hoping that this is going to sound a lot better, and we have the Yeti phallus, and we're good.
Yeah.
The giant Yeti phallus. I don't know. It's supposed to be a really good microphone. And a lot of the people that I asked about it, podcasting buddies of mine, they said that this was the microphone. One of the pinnacles of podcasting.
Looks good. Looks cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty slick microphone. And then actually, you know, it looks like a Yeti. Like, if you, literally, if you look at it from the front, it looks like a Yeti with, like, his arms up like that. Like, yay, Yeti. Yeah, it kind of looks like a Yeti. He's, like, standing up on his hind legs. I don't know. Whatever. Okay. I mean, I've never actually seen a Yeti. But, you know, from a cryptozoological standpoint, it could theoretically be Yeti-like. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, we're going to try to get through this episode.
Yes. Without falling asleep.
Without falling asleep.
As I yawn every 30 seconds.
If we do happen to fall asleep, you know, fast forward until the snoring stops and the talking starts again. And then we should be fine. We should be good to go. Oh my god, I'm so out of breath.
Why is that?
Because I had to walk up the stairs.
Well,
and now that I'm 37 years old, I can't walk the fucking length of myself? Oh my god.
When did you get to be 37?
I turned 37 on the 21st of February. I know, I can't believe that I'm 37.
No, me either.
But you know what? Even though I am 37,
yeah.
My dad asked me the other day about this podcast. And I was like, Dad, you don't want to listen to it.
Oh, yes, he does.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Because I swear far too much. And that's not a thing that you do with my dad. Yeah, no. No. If he does happen to find this, I apologize, Dad. But swearing is funny. People think it's funny. I don't know.
And it feels good to swear.
Sometimes you just gotta swear. It's just one of those things.
Absolutely fucking right.
A fucking man. Yes.
Let's fucking do this.
Let's fucking do it! You know Mimi's tired because she's swearing more than usual. Okay. So anyway. Hey everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads. I am Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven.
The wonderfully talented Mimi Steven. A couple of notes before we start this episode officially. And this is kind of like fucking Groundhog Day for me, because we recorded it before, and now we're recording it again. But, yeah, so the blog is doing really well. We're getting an average of like 400 views a month, which is really good. The Twitter feed is now up over 2,900 followers. So that's doing really well as well.
And I think at Saturday I said, I don't tweet.
Yeah, you said that you don't. You're not
I've never tweeted.
You're not a, you're not a twit.
No.
Yeah.
Never tweeted.
Yeah. I'm big into the Twitter. The key to Twitter is like using the hashtags to achieve the desired effect. Because otherwise, you know, you tweet something and it goes to just the list that can see you. But if you use the hashtags, then it goes to a wider audience. So it's learning how to make Twitter functional.
Okay.
But there are a lot of people that say that Twitter is just like a bunch of men yelling at each other.
Well, we do know a few of those.
Which, but... you know, whatever. Let's see what else. Some great new podcasts started following us on Twitter. So, the Salty Goodness podcast, Tipsy Stories, and the Cryptonaut podcast, which is a podcast about cryptozoology, which is actually pretty neat. It's a good listen, good show. So, let's see what else. Oh, I mentioned yesterday too, not yesterday, Saturday. Fuck, okay. Try it again.
Damn it.
I mentioned it on Saturday that Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri, mm-hmm. had started following us on Twitter, which I thought was, I don't know, like, kind of cool, but at the same time, I was like, really, you like it?
Well, I think it's like, cool. I'm just surprised that you know who the voice of Siri is.
Well, I only noticed because verified users, like, say, Brad Pitt joins Twitter. Mm-hmm. He gets, like, a little check mark by his name, little blue check mark that says it's the actual Brad Pitt. Like, it's the actual person. So she had a little blue check mark by her name. And anytime I see somebody that adds us who has the little blue check mark, I'm like, who are you? Are you famous? Can you, like, transport us to stardom? Ooh. Is there, like, anything... Is there anything you could do for us to get us out of this creepy bedroom and into...
the only one with a blue check mark?
No, there's a bunch of people on Twitter. Lots of celebrities use Twitter.
Anyone that...
as a platform, yeah.
Looked at us?
Trying to think. She's the most recent one.
Okay.
Hugh I come Jackman. Across him.
Anyone know Hugh Jackman? Have him listen to us. Right? He's yummy.
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Not really big into the Hugh Jackman. I'd be stoked if Sarah Michelle Gellar started following us. Any day now. I'm just waiting. Pining. Waiting. Anyway. So, let's see here. This week I have a story about the bubonic plague and also with a little touch of folklore. I talk about Pesta, the Norwegian incarnation of the plague in Norway. So that is mine. So I kind of, you know, I talk about the plague, but then I talk about folklore and traditions and stuff like that. So it's kind of neat. What do you have?
Well, this week I'm going to back to Louisiana, mm-hmm. and we're going to visit a cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And in this cemetery is the voodoo priestess. Marie Laveau. Yeah.
Yep. I feel like the last time I saw something on Marie Laveau, it was something on the Biography Channel.
Oh, yeah?
Or something, and it was talking about voodoo, and it was talking about her daughter, and, like, how she was getting older, and she was not doing so much of it, and then her daughter kind of picked up the mantle. Yep.
And made it into what we attribute to the original Marie, right. But it was really Marie's daughter.
Right. And then I think that there was a lot of belief that it was still her, like it mm-hmm. was still Marie Laveau, but it was actually her daughter.
Right.
And so they thought that she had performed some sort of voodoo ritual on herself.
Right.
And made herself young again. And right. so everybody was like, you know, flocking to...
Her daughter looked just like her.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was no way to tell them apart, and it was, yeah. So I think that was what the biography kind of talked about more so was, and something about a lake. She drowned in a lake or something, and then she came back to life? Or...
You know, there was just a little blurb about a lake, but it had to do with Marie, too, not the first Marie, but I didn't go that far because mostly wanted to stay with Marie 1.
Yeah, I think it had something to do with, like, she went into a lake and she was in there for a few days or something?
I don't know that far.
And then she magically emerged again. It was like a story about reincarnation or something.
Hmm.
I don't know. But yeah, very interesting story.
Cool.
So I think we decided on Saturday's episode that you were going to go first.
Yep.
So let's try that, shall we?
We shall.
Again, for
let's
the second
see if
time.
This stuff is in order. Okay.
Happy fucking Groundhog Day.
That's right. Okay, so today we're going to St. Louis Cemetery Number 1. It was built in 1789 behind the French Quarter, and over 100,000 people were buried there. Okay, so St. Louis Cemetery is considered to be the oldest cemetery in New Orleans. However, it is actually the second. The first lies beneath the area known as the French Quarter. In other words, the area is built upon the bones of the dead.
They just stack them up there like cordwood.
That's right.
Yep.
They didn't move the cemetery. They just left the people there.
Yeah. You know, I wonder about that stuff where I'm from, too. Like, if they actually moved the original monuments, you know, and left the bones and then just sold the land again, you know, because they have like crypts and stuff underneath some of the churches in St. John's. And I wonder if, you know, there's something else going on.
I think a lot of people got left behind when buildings started.
Yeah.
Sad.
It is sad.
So after 1780, the dead had to be buried away from the city in the outlying swamp, in the outlying swampy areas.
Oh, dare and dem dare swamps?
Yep. Out there.
Dare den hay. Oh, yeah.
The dead were forced out due to the growing fears of illnesses affecting the living.
I would just like to say, as a little aside, that somebody commented about the Wisconsin accents on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to say that when I do a Wisconsin accent, it is not because it is my accent, because I am Canadian.
So what's your accent?
So I'm making fun
what do you of think the of Wisconsin accent.
What?
What do you think a Wisconsin accent is?
Well, the oh, yeah, there it in here.
That's not Wisconsin.
Yes, it is. People in Tulsa.
Oh, Pishaw.
That's why people in Tulsa and Waukesha.
Well, this person doesn't speak.
Sometimes you do it, but not super often. Yeah.
So can we get back to my story?
Yes. Sorry. Anyway. I just wanted to set the record straight.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Okay.
Okay. Where was I now? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Unfortunately, in the areas where the dead were now to be buried was a very waterlogged area because it was very swampy.
Soupy.
Yeah. So they had to begin building above ground tombs.
It was like a human stew. Almost.
And in the tombs.
Yes.
They would be like family tombs where
yep.
Everybody from the family was buried. So they mm-hmm. just packed them one on top of the other.
Right.
Squeezed uncle. Whatever. Mm-hmm. Anywho.
Not much elbow room.
So, in 1789, saw the opening of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. All the affluent and common people were buried there. In 1897, the Storyville area, or in other words, Red Light District, mm-hmm. was built up around the cemetery. This led to the wealthy families going elsewhere to bury their dead, and the cemetery began to go into decline.
Now, the Storyville area of New Orleans, that's like the iconic pictures of New Orleans that we see with like the balconies and stuff. Like when you see like the parades and stuff downtown.
I believe so.
With the women on the balconies flipping their shirts up.
I believe so.
To get beads. Yeah.
It's where, you know, the area of prostitution used to be mm-hmm. and, mm-hmm. you know, naughty things yep. would happen mm-hmm. there. So.
Yep. What was it they used to call it? Houses of ill repute.
Absolutely. Very ill repute.
Uh-huh. Yep.
One of the most prominent figures buried in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 was Marie Laveau, mm-hmm. a voodoo princess, or the voodoo queen.
Hmm.
She was born in 1801 and died in 1881. Marie Laveau was a free woman of color in New Orleans. Her father was a free man of color. Her mother was Creole. She was a practitioner of the occult, fortune-telling, and voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
Her type of voodoo involved elements from African, Native American, and Catholic elements woven together. She often cared for the poor and helped the sick with herbal medicines. She actually was very well known for helping the poor, the indigent, which is the same thing, but... any persons of need, she was there for them.
She was a bit of a humanitarian.
Yeah, she really was. She also consoled the condemned, mm-hmm. which I'll get to in a little bit.
I think that she helped people outside of her own circle as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't just like, I am a woman of color and I'm going to help, you know, other people of color. She was very much, yeah.
She treated the wealthy, she treated the poor, mm-hmm. all the same. Yep. She treated black, she treated white.
Yep.
Indian, Creole, the whole thing.
Yep.
She actually was probably a really wonderful person.
Hmm.
By the time of her death, Marie Laveau, she was feared and respected, and some thought her immortal. There is a story that she was seen walking in the French Quarter the day after her death. The day after her death, she has since been seen walking amongst the tombstones in the cemetery number 1 where she is buried. Marie followed her mother and grandmother in practicing voodoo. In 1819, Marie married Jacques Perry, who died at a young age under sketchy circumstances. They had 2 children who died young. After her husband Jacques died, she was known as the Widow Paris. It is actually listed there on her grave marker. Marie was in her early 20s when he died, and she became a hairdresser to the wealthy women in New Orleans. Marie was in a very unique position to pick up lots and lots of gossip. She heard gossip from the wealthy women. She heard gossip from the servants. I mean, she was really in a very good position.
That's where women go to talk shit, as the hairdresser.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah. I love my hairdresser.
I go to Sport Clips.
Do you?
So we don't really talk shit in Sports Clips.
Aw.
Because it's all pretty much dudes, and then there's me.
Oh. Whatever works.
So, yeah. Anyway.
She knew everything going on in New Orleans, which aided in her being known as a voodoo queen. She soon married, or rather entered into a common law marriage, with a man named Louis Christopher Dominic Demeny. People say they have 15 children, but only one survived into adulthood, and that was her daughter Marie. They say she had a snake by the name of Zombie, named after an African god. She began to manipulate people to believe in her mystical abilities through their servants, whom she would often heal of illnesses or pay off to spread rumors that she is a voodoo priestess. She liked to be, I think she really liked to be like in the light. She liked people to come to her. She liked being known.
Well, and we know that there is no better advertising than word of mouth.
That's right.
Yep.
We know that very well. Soon she began to be coveted for her potions and her spells. Some of the stories surrounding Marie are that she had enough power that she could influence who got into City Hall and who didn't. She could, you know, say who was mayor, who wasn't.
That's pretty, yeah.
They had to really respect her and pay homage to her.
Wow.
Or else they were out of there.
Yeah, I wonder, though, how much of that was respect and how much of it was fear. Though,
I don't know.
You know, because if they'd spread all this word of mouth about her being a voodoo priestess, and they were, you know, believing that she was a voodoo priestess and that she could cast spells and stuff, then maybe they weren't necessarily like.
I'm not sure that it can really be separated. I think for those times, they had to respect her as well as fear her. I mean, with the stories and everything.
Yeah. I feel like that those are two different animals. Because, like, you can respect somebody and respect all of the good work they're doing. But if you fear them, then you're not necessarily, I don't know.
I don't know if it's exclusive. Because think of The Godfather. Everyone feared The Godfather, but they always showed them respect.
You come to me the day of my daughter's wedding. Yeah.
Yep. So, yep. I don't know. Well, I don't know. Teach his own. So, anyway, she was known for healing the sick through many difficult epidemics in the area. It was thought that she was the reason a lieutenant governor and a governor died, but there was no more written about it, so I couldn't read on. People either thought of her as a saint or a witch. In the 1860s, Marie began to hide her voodoo practice. Marie died in 1881. Her daughter Marie Laveau II took over the practice of voodoo. And she actually made it into what we think of today. You know, is somewhat scary, somewhat odd religious dancing and something to be feared.
Yeah.
And I think Marie I was very much about healing people and helping them to feel better and take care of them. And I think Marie II took it a little further in a scarier kind of way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, voodoo has really become, like, just ingrained in the folklore and the culture of New Orleans.
Right.
You know, I mean, the whole reason why I want to go to New Orleans is to go to some of these shops that sell voodoo items.
Yeah.
And, you know, get a voodoo doll and, you know, talk to some people about voodoo and learn more about it. And, you know, I mean, I'm fascinated about that kind of stuff, you know.
Right.
Because it's religion to some people.
Right.
And it's a very powerful faith to some people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and a lot of people ascribe kind of a dark tinge to voodoo as well. And it's not always dark.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, the practice of Wicca, where, you know, not all Wiccans practice, you know, more dark magic.
Right.
Because they say that the true magic is neither, you know, black nor white. It's somewhere in between. Yeah, I had no idea voodoo existed until I came to the U.S. And then I was like, wait a second.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Another bit of information about Marie is that she did not believe in capital punishment. She would give counsel to the condemned before they were to die. One tale of this is about a Frenchman who was to hang. It said that she created a huge storm while he's on the gallows, just about ready to go down. Mm-hmm. She created a huge storm that developed, and with so much water and rain that the noose slipped off his neck and he was able to flee. At Marie Laveau's gravesite, it is said if you leave an offering to Marie, such as a trinket or flowers or anything, you know, that if she liked you and liked what you gave her, she would make your wish come true. And if it came true, you were supposed to come back and put three X's on her tombstone. So they had a problem with people doing that. So they had to stop. They would do that, but they would do other things too. So they had to stop letting people into the cemetery. Yep. You can only go with a tour guide or if your family is there. There are many people who believe they have seen Marie wearing her white turban and her long white gown, that they heard her ghost chanting some sort of a voodoo curse to trespassers who are in the cemetery without permission and creating mischief. She doesn't like mischief. On Sundays after Mass, slaves were free for the rest of the day because of the Code Noir. Many of the slaves and freed people would go to a place called the Congo Square, which was located behind the French Quarter in a swampy area. There, people would barter for goods and meet with others and tell stories and sing together, and they would meet up with their families or friends that were sold from different places so that they weren't together anymore. Marie would also sell her gris-gris, or her charms, herbs, and medicinals. Marie would let wealthy people come to join the festivities for a fee. She would sell them her charms, her herbs, and help with their spiritual needs. Marie lived at 152 Rue St. Anne Street. Today it is 1020 St. Anne Street. Her home was a cottage made of adobe. She reportedly received the cottage for helping a man free his son from murder charges. The tale goes like this. Marie held three peppers in her mouth, putting her intentions on them. That intentions meaning free this person, free this person, free this person. Then she would hid them under the seat of the judge. Then she nailed a cow's tongue under the seat of the prosecutor's chair, so he could not present his case. In other words, as you said on Saturday, he was tongue-tied. The boy was found innocent and released, and Maria got her house. Marie became ill in 1875 and rarely left the house. Although the original Laveau house was torn down in 1903, a new building was built back right on top. People are said to see her ghostly figure wearing a long white dress and her signature white turban. It is said that Marie and her disciples still perform rituals with possibly animal sacrifices. Right now, the home is used as a vacation rental. A couple rented the house, and one night heard chanting and drumming coming from, they thought, outside, but after going around, walking around, they couldn't find anything. They came back in the house, and they found that the noises were coming from the living room. They left that night because they were a little afraid.
Right.
But came back the next morning, and all they found was a single feather. They left and did not come back. Feathers are believed to bring the person who finds one good luck. Although if you find one on your pillow, you will become very sick or possibly die. This tale actually goes like this. If you put a chicken head into a pillow of your victim, after time, the hex will take effect. And a single feather will appear on top of that pillow. Another person staying at the house is said to have seen a shadow figure cross the room, staring at him evilly. As I stare at Janine. Okay. So another visitor, one morning, awoke one morning, not being able to move for a long time, as if somebody was sitting on top of her, holding her in place. During the Great Depression, a man fell asleep. Actually, he was a homeless man, fell asleep on top of a tomb. He awoke to chanting and drums, and he was walking around the cemetery after he woke, and he ended up at Marie's tomb. Then he saw ghostly nude figures dancing around the tomb. In the center was the ghostly figure of Marie and her snake zombie. A man by the name of Elmer Banks, around the 1930s, was a customer at a drugstore, which was really close to the cemetery, when a woman came in. When she left, Elmer felt afraid, like there was just something in the air. So he left.
Bad juju.
Yes. So he left at the back of the store. And when he got back there, the woman was there, and she asked him, "Do you know who I am?" And he said, "No, ma'am." She got really mad at him and slapped him across the face. After she slapped him, she levitated and took off into the sky and went over to the cemetery and disappeared. Elmer fainted, and the store owner awoke him and told him that that was Marie Laveau. St. Louis Cemetery holds many other intriguing figures, such as Bernard de Margini. Sorry if I'm butchering all these names. Bartholomew Lafon, Ernest R. Dutch, Morial, and even actor Nicolas Cage. And yes, he is still alive. So stay tuned for more on St. Louis Cemetery number 1. Da-da-da-da.
Nice.
So, lots of interesting stuff, so I have a feeling I'll be delving more into it.
A lot of those cemeteries down there, too, are full to bursting.
Yep.
I mean, the tombs are very, very, very close together.
Right.
Some of them are very ornate, and some of them are pretty plain, and, like, they just all, it almost looks like a city.
It does look like a city.
It's very crazy, but it's a city of the dead.
Right.
Which is kind of... It's kind of interesting. It's kind of like a cool juxtaposition because, you know, New Orleans is so, like, lively and, you know, whatever. And then you have these cemeteries that are cities of the dead. I don't know. It's just kind of cool. Yeah.
In the cemetery where my dad is built, there's a very small mausoleum. And there's stained glass windows on each side and then the door. And there's a little window in the door. So I peeked in one day. And on one side, someone was buried in it. On the other side, because there was a nameplate above it, and it was 19-year-old boy. So that was sad. And he died in the 1800s. So this is an old mausoleum. And then on the other side, there was no nameplate of anyone there, but the top part of the crypt was broken in. But it was really old, and it was kind of cool.
Yeah, there's actually, I think it's on Capitol, as you're coming down Capitol, like going towards 124th Street, if you take one of those ramps and go slightly up towards the right-hand side of, like, that overpass, mm-hmm. there's a tiny little cemetery right there.
Oh.
Like, right by the side of the road. Uh-huh. And all of the stones are, like, kind of leaning, and they all look older. Oh. And I was like, you know, me and Mimi should go up there and...
We should.
Like, poke around a little bit one day and take a couple of pictures of those stones.
Mm-hmm. Could do some rubbings, too.
Yeah, because they look... I mean, they look pretty old. They look pretty cool, so... I don't know. Yeah,
I really like cemeteries. I don't know why.
I do too. I don't know. I find them very peaceful.
Absolutely.
I also love the fact that people express themselves through the stones.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like you get to know them
a little
through
bit,
the stones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody does that. Like,
right.
My great grandmother's headstone is pretty. It's pretty plain, you know, and it has. I think it has one of those little pictures on it mm-hmm. of her. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty generic, but a lot of the stones around her, I mean, people really, you know, like they made sure that their loved ones were represented
right.
on the stone so that when they went back to visit, it was actually like going back to visit the person, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah, I don't know. I like cemeteries.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I like the big mausoleums too. Mm-hmm. I like to go visit those. All right. Okay. So, like I said, I've got a little piece here about the Black Plague, and I also talk a little bit about folklore. Mimi, when you were kind of talking about the person who felt pressure on their chest while they were sleeping, mm-hmm. I kind of talk about sleep paralysis a little bit and how we personify these creatures
mm-hmm.
so that we can kind of get over our fear.
Yeah, I've had that happen to me a number of times.
Yeah, yeah, it's happened to me once or twice, but it's pretty interesting when it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I told you that one time where I was in bed and I wasn't feeling real hot. So this is what I kind of chalked it up to. I think I was sick.
Uh-huh.
But I was lying in bed and I was lying on my left side, and I was half asleep, half awake, and I felt all of a sudden this sudden, like, rush of cool air
mm-hmm.
from the base of the bed, the foot of the bed. And it was like it lifted the sheets up
oh.
so that they billowed,
uh-huh.
and the curtains were, like, billowing.
Oh,
and
wow.
then after a while, I kind of, like, came around, you know, and physically woke up and sat up, and I was like, wow, that's really weird. But it turned, like, the whole room kind of a blue-gray
color.
Was
it here in this house?
Was here in this house.
Ah.
Yeah. And I think I've said before that I've got a minor that follows me around. I actually noticed the other day on my ID for work at the data entry place, it's kind of starting to fade out a little bit on the one side.
Oh.
And you can see, like, a face there. And it looks like it's wearing a helmet, whatever it is. So I was like, did he follow me to work? Like, really? Okay. You know, you like me that much that you're going to follow me to work? I don't know. But yeah, so there's...
Well, if there's anyone from the other world who has something right? to say, please speak into the microphone. We've got a new one.
Yeah. I mean, ever since I've been very little, I've had those experiences, you know, so...
Wow.
I don't know.
Interesting.
It's strange. But yeah, there's a miner that lives here. There is a female.
Why do you think it's a miner?
I've seen him with the hat, the big hat. You know, when they used to put, like, the actual, like, candle or whatever in it. Like, it's an old mining helmet, and I see him sometimes.
Interesting.
And then there's another entity that is like an old lady, or she's an older lady. I don't know necessarily that she's, like, a grandmotherly figure. I don't really get that feeling. But when she appears to me, she's always in white with kind of a blue cast to her.
Has Joanne had experiences?
No. No. But she's very scientific.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very much more on the creative side and believe in that sort of stuff. We've actually, we've been up north at her family's cabin, and I woke up in the middle of the night one night to go to the bathroom, and as I was coming back from the bathroom, there was a lady standing in the hallway, and she was barefoot, and she was wearing, like, kind of a frock,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like one of those loose dresses.
Yeah.
It looked like she was wearing an apron of some sort, And she had her hair in like a plait, like a, you know, a braid. And it was fairly long. She had fairly long hair. And so I got this feeling like there was like that feeling that you get when you know that somebody is there. Mm-hmm. Like not, I think somebody is there. Like somebody's physically there with you.
Right.
And she told me to tell Joanne that she was proud of her.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. And then I went back to bed and I was kind of weirded out about it. And the only reason why I know that it was something that happened was when I went to get back in bed, I stubbed my toe. And when I got up the next morning, my toe really hurt. And I was like, oh, so I wasn't dreaming it. But I went out into the living room with the family as breakfast was being made. And on the back wall, they have, like, all the pictures of, like, Joanne's grandparents and Joanne's great-grandparents, like, building the cabin that we're staying in. And I looked. And in one of the pictures, there's a lady with long hair that's in a braid. Mm-hmm. And she's wearing kind of like a, you know, like a frock, and she's wearing a bit of an apron, and she's standing there with Joanne's great somebody, I don't know, grandfather or something. Mm-hmm. But she's standing there on the step by the house. And so I said to Joanne's father, I said, who is that? And he said, oh, that's Julia. That's Joanne's great grandmother. And I was like, oh, okay. And then instantly I started to feel like cold and got like goose flesh and stuff because I was like, oh shit, okay. So then the next time that we were alone, I was like, so I have to tell you something. And she's like, what? I said, so I'm pretty sure that your great grandma told me to tell you that she was proud of you. So I'm just letting you know that that's something, that that's a thing. Uh-huh. And we don't ever have to talk about it again. But yeah, it was just... Yeah, just make sure that you tell her that I'm proud of her.
Aww.
Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Thanks for that.
Aww.
If you guys want more of my ghostly experiences, you can check out the Hauntheads blog. A lot of the earlier posts, I have one story that I called Flatbed Ghost, which is about an experience that I had in my childhood home. And there's another one, I believe, I think I've told you about it, Mimi, about the dancing specters in the basement. You'll have to go on the blog and read about it. Cause yeah. I could talk about this stuff all day. But you know, I like to try to keep it within an hour so that people can go on about their lives, and not sit here and listen to me just prattle on. But yeah, so hit up the Hauntheads blog, hauntheads.wordpress.com. Check it out. Yeah. So, as I said, plague, pesta, folklore, Norway, all that good stuff.
All right. Hit it, girl.
So, it killed more than 20 million Europeans, almost one-third of the continent's population, but it arrived silently aboard 12 Genoese trading ships docked at the Sicilian port of Messina in 1347. Onlookers who had come to welcome the ships were met with a terrible sight, as many of the sailors on board these ships had died at sea, and the remaining crew on board were severely ill. With the pain of illness, many of the sailors had become insane, and they were covered in these oozing black boils. It was not very attractive. By the time any action was taken to make the ships leave, the affliction that had struck down the sailors had already jumped ship. And by the time the sickness had run its course, it had cut down 75 million people, though this is only an estimate worldwide. I believe it was actually closer to 100 million. But, I mean, there are differing numbers on that. So, I'm speaking, of course, of the Black Plague. So, plague can take three forms. And this is from medicinenet.com. So the first form is bubonic. In this form of infection, bacteria infiltrates the lymph nodes, and it causes them to become enlarged and very tender, very painful. These are called bubos. The accompanying symptoms are fever, chills, headaches, and weakness. And if not treated, the infection can spread to other areas of the body. And this is the most common form that has been seen in U.S. infections. I feel like the most recent report was in like 2010. And I think that I said last time when our recording failed that there was plague bacteria present in the New York subway system.
Yes, you did.
But it's, I think it's dormant. I think it exists, but it's not like affecting anybody. I don't know. Well, it's kind of interesting. Yeah. So the second form is septicemic. And this form is a result of plague bacteria entering the bloodstream. So this can occur on its own, or it can develop from bubonic plague. A lot of these different types feed off of one another. The symptoms include fever, chills, weakness, abdominal pain, and shock. There can be bleeding and tissue death, especially of the fingers and toes. These dying tissues may appear black, thus the name the Black Death. The third form is pneumonic plague. And in the pneumonic form, the symptoms of the other types of plague can be present, but the characteristic clinical picture of pneumonia is present. So you get a lot of fluid on the lungs, and then your body naturally wants to force that out. So the plague bacteria spreads to the lungs, and then you know, these infected droplets of sputum and blood shoot out when people are coughing. Yeah, and spitting. People were not super clean.
Right.
Way back when it was not a thing. You know, I mean, they used to share quarters with their animals. So, I mean, if there were fleas on your animals and then right. the fleas bit you, well then all of a sudden your animals had plague and you had plague and everybody has a plague. You know, fun.
I didn't realize animals could get plague.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, in Europe, I think I talk about this a little bit later, but there was actually a wool shortage.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the sheep had died of plague. So, yeah, I mean, let's see here. So, yeah, it affects the lungs directly when these infected droplets are inhaled, basically. That's how you get the pneumonic version. So this is the only form of plague that can be transmitted from person to person. It includes shortness of breath, chest pain, because obviously you're coughing constantly, fever, and then this watery, bloody mucus that you're spitting up. Let's see here. So according to History.com, many early Europeans believed that the plague was a punishment from God himself. So, quote, because they didn't understand the biology of the disease, many people believed that the Black Death was a kind of a divine punishment or retribution for sins against God, such as greed, blasphemy, heresy, fornication, and worldliness, which I don't know what necessarily worldliness would be.
Well, I somebody think it has who... to do with ladies of the night and
men
of the night.
Oh! See, I would have thought it was somebody
a little
who, like...
here and there.
Somebody who, like, traveled a lot, I would think would be world, because that's the modern version of the word, you know, somebody who's worldly is somebody who's traveled and experienced a lot. So maybe they're just experiencing hanky-panky.
Maybe.
And not not traveling at all too much, just the hanky-panky part. So by this logic, the only way to overcome the plague was to win God's forgiveness. Some people believe that the way to do this was to purge their communities of heretics and other troublemakers. So, for example, many thousands of Jews were massacred in 1348 and 1349. Thousands more fled to sparsely populated regions of Eastern Europe, where they could be relatively safe from the rampaging mobs in the cities. That is until Hitler came along, and then we know what happened there. Some people coped with the terror and uncertainty of the Black Death epidemic by lashing out at their neighbors. Others cope by turning inward and fretting about the condition of their own souls. So, I mean, it really just drastically depended on the person. Some upper class men then joined processions of flagellants that traveled from town to town, and they engaged in public displays of punishment. So they would actually flagellate themselves with these whips with like little metal spikes and stuff in them. And then it was like a big show. Like, people in the town would come out and watch these people basically beat themselves into submission. It was pretty pretty graphic.
They still do that today.
Yeah, yeah. In some cases, they do. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's safe to say that everybody went a little mad. And for good reason. I mean, their friends, their neighbors, their family members, they were dying all around them. And it seemed as if the world that they knew was disintegrating before their eyes. You know, I mean, literally just everything was falling apart. Their livestock died. As I said before, the loss of so many sheep led to a wool shortage across Europe. It was a culture of insanity, and I guess that's why many people in Norway, both those suffering from plague symptoms and those looking on, believe that their afflictions had something to do with a creature from Norwegian folklore whose name was Pesta. So, Pesta the Plague Hag, in Norwegian folk legend, Pesta is an old woman who carries a rake and a broom. So, she visits different cities, she visits homes, and if she carries a rake with her on a visit to your home, then that means that some of the people in the house are going to survive because they slipped through the teeth mm-hmm. of the rake. If she's carrying a broom, then that means that there will be absolutely no survivors. So, on a side note, it's no small wonder that the name Pesta is located on a list of popular baby names at number 71,580, because if you hate your kid, name him Pesta. So as I was searching Google, I happened upon this list, and I scrolled down to see that there's no meaning for this particular baby name. There is, however, a little button that you can push to suggest one, so I wrote Plague Hag. So I'm sure whoever checks that mail will be stupefied, but anyway, as an adult, you have to find fun where you can. And I found fun on that list of baby names. So I apologize to whoever has to edit that and accept and reject emails.
You're going to have to keep looking and see if they take it.
Yeah, I think they have to approve it. I think it's like it'll go to somebody's email and be like, somebody has suggested an alternate meaning for this name and whatever. And then it'll be like Plague Hag. And they'll be like, what? Fuck no, I'm not going to put that on there.
That's funny.
So anyway. The WordPress site Myths and Microbes, which is actually one of my favorite WordPress sites, states that Pesta arrives by a ghost ship filled with rats. I'll tackle that in a little bit. The personification of an unseen force is a common theme in many folklore tales. So, for example, the hag of Newfoundland folklore is this four-legged creature that sits upon your chest and freezes you to the spot. You know, it's this hideous creature. With, like, long, stringy hair and just, like, gross. You know, gray, scaly skin and that. She's not good. So you are essentially powerless against this thing. You're unable to move. You're unable to scream. And it just stares down at you with these black eyes. So today we know this strange feeling that some of us experience between sleep and wakefulness is actually something called sleep paralysis. But before there was clinical diagnosis available to explain away fears, there were a lot of people who slept with, like, boards across their chest with nails sticking up. Because they thought, you know, supposedly the hag will get stabbed by the nail when she goes to sit on my chest. Yeah. And then she can't sit on my chest because I got this protection, yo. So, you know, she's not gonna be able to pin me down.
Well, it would be very hard to have sex that
way. Well, she's not there to have sex. She's there to...
I just sit on people. If their significant other decide to roll over and they
I can't even imagine. That'll get you sleeping on the sofa for sure. Better be a comfy sofa. Yeah, supposedly the hag would get stabbed by the nail and run away. And I think that this is further proof that a lot of folklore in no way has to be logical. It in no way has to make sense. Let's see here. Doo-doo. So, according to... What?
I just have a little something.
What's
it? I just Googled Pesta.
Yeah.
And it came up, the Witcher Wiki. But it says Pesta are the same thing as plague maidens.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So. Yeah, Pesta, or pestilence was, like, the literal, just the personification of plague. You know, and that's just what people did. Oh, that's actually a pretty picture. The other one that I saw was it's a very old woman with like stringy gray hair, and she wears a black cloak over a red dress.
Oh.
And then she carries her broom and a rake over one shoulder.
Oh, okay.
So, but she's like this haggard old woman. Yeah. Okay. That's the way it was depicted. But I can imagine that the description of what Pesta might look like probably varies with the household.
Yeah.
You know, or the city that you tell the story in, or, you know, I mean, it can happen. So, according to Myths and Microbes, this type of personification of death and disease is common during the late medieval period. It represents an attempt to explain a horrifying experience. The folklore of the Black Plague developed through observation of events that must have seemed inexplicable to people living through them. We can, however, learn something about how the events unfolded through a careful examination of the folklore of Pesta. Folklorists argue that folklore can be true and can be the results of individuals rationally perceiving a real situation. Through the story of Pesta and her path across Norway, we see an attempt to explain the spread of the disease based on actual observations. While the entity of Pesta is not a literal being, we can imagine her as a representation of the microbe that we know today. So, the plague, known also by its Latin name Yersinia pestis, or pestilence, traveled from port to port by ship, so it's no wonder that Pesta, the personification of the plague itself, also used that mode of transportation. That legend states that she traveled by ghost ship, filled with rats. The imagery is just so powerful in this story. It's really quite fascinating. You know, when you think about it, Pesta was not only the harbinger of grotesque suffering, but those sailors that traveled by the same means on these ships were carriers of the plague and victims of Pesta. But they were almost like her emissaries.
Okay.
Yeah. She would, like, send them out ahead of her kind of thing. And then she would go and reap. You know, just very, very interesting. So rats were said to be carriers of the plague during the first outbreaks. The plague bacteria is actually transmitted by fleas on the animals, not the rats themselves. But people had no way of knowing this back then. They simply associated the rats with the illness, and certain folk legends in certain parts of the world basically perpetuated this myth. Not meth. There was no meth. Well, maybe there was meth. I don't know. So, meth was not a treatment for early forms of the plague. Yeah, some common early treatments were the vinegar and water treatment. So, you put the person to bed, and then you wash them with vinegar and rose water. Another supposed cure was lancing the buboes and draining them. The swellings that were associated with the Black Death was said that they could be cut open to allow the disease to, quote, leave the body. So, a mixture of tree resin, the roots of white lilies, and dried human excrement... could be applied to the places where the body had been cut open. I personally don't see a problem with rubbing poo-poo in a wound.
Oh, Janine.
It makes logical sense to take poo-poo and rub it in an open wound, doesn't it?
No.
Yeah, no. It absolutely doesn't. It kind of grosses me out a little bit to think about it, but anyway. Bleeding. In that time period, bloodletting was it was a popular way to allow disease and affliction to leave the body.
Those black things.
Leeches?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So of course, you know, because bleeding was something that they did, I'm going to give you a minute. Because I feel like...
Did you see how I threw that in?
Would you also like some fava beans and a nice Chianti? Yeah. Yeah. I don't have any Chianti. I have some nice rum.
Okay.
Oh my. Think about, like, dead puppies or something.
Aww.
Yeah. Are they funny?
No, but the look at your face is.
Dead puppies are not funny. We don't laugh about dead puppies. Mimi doesn't laugh about dead puppies. That's not funny. Okay. So, in terms of diet, they talk about you shouldn't eat food that goes off easily or smells badly, such as meat, cheese, fish. Instead, you should eat fruits, vegetables, bread, grains, that kind of stuff. They talked about sanitation, which back then, you know, we've already kind of discussed that sanitation was not a thing. So they said that the street should be cleaned of all human and animal waste, and then it should be taken by a cart to a field outside the village and burnt. All bodies should be buried in deep pits outside the village, and the clothing that they're wearing should also be burnt. In terms of pestilence medicine, they talk about taking the shells of newly laid eggs and then grinding those shells into a powder. You chop up the leaves and the petals of marigold flowers, put the shells and the marigold into a pot of good ale, not shitty ale, good ale. And then you warm that mixture over a fire. Then the patient should drink this mixture every morning and every night. In terms of witchcraft, they talk about placing a live hen next to the swelling to dry out the pestilence from the body. To aid recovery, you should drink a glass of your own urine twice a day. So I have this image of, like, all these people sitting around in their houses with chickens tied to their necks, drinking their own pee. And it just, like, it doesn't add any logic to the argument that this is something you should do to get rid of your plague affliction. Like, you know, because that chicken's going to go for the eyes. You know it's going to go for the eyes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a fucking chicken. It's a bastard. Of course it's going to go for the eyes. Chickens are bastards.
Yeah, have you had chickens?
No, but I know people who have had chickens, and that's enough. So, in terms of the face of the plague, plague doctors were often hired to treat entire communities, and then they were paid via salary by these communities. So, the dominant theory around the 17th century was that miasma, literally translated into, means bad air, was to blame for the spread of the plague. Now, they're not right, but they're not wrong. Like, they're kind of in a center area where, like, they're close to figuring it out, but not quite, because it's not the fact that the air is bad, it's the fact that people are coughing over you, and then you become afflicted from their bloody sputum. You know, it's not because the air is bad. But the air that people are expelling upon you is bad because then it gives you the plague. So it's like kind of, yeah, I don't know. They were close. They were close.
The air has been befouled.
I'll give them kudos for that one, because that was pretty close. Let's see. So due to this miasma, on their faces, the doctors wore those masks with the long beaks. And then they would fill those masks, the beaks, with like flowery scented stuff. Stuff that smelled good. Basically to beat out the miasma. The eye holes would be covered with glass. And then they would basically seal in the good air. And then they would breathe out of just two little tiny holes just above the nose. Let's see here. So, Wikipedia states that medical historians have attributed the invention of the beak doctor costume to Charles de Lormay, who adopted in 1619 the idea of full head-to-toe protective garments modeled after a soldier's armor. This consisted of the bird-like mask with the spectacles or the glass over the eye holes, and long leather, either Moroccan or Levantine, or waxed canvas gowns, which went literally from the neck all the way down to the ankle. The overclothing garment, as well as leggings, gloves, boots, and a hat, because you got to have a hat. You got to have a hat to go with it, were made of leather that had been waxed. And then the garment was impregnated with several other fragrant items along with the inside of the mask. So many people believe that that beaked mask and the large hat and the long waxed robe were worn during the original outbreaks of the plague. But it wasn't the case, because the miasma theory didn't come along until the 17th century. And we're talking about 1347. So it was a long way off. So doctors would travel from town to town, and they often were held for quarantine themselves due to their proximity to the afflicted. They'd carry a long staff that they would use to kind of poke and prod different areas of the body so that they actually didn't have to come into contact with it. They also used it to keep a safe distance from people who insisted on walking too closely. There's something about, I think that in medieval times, there was something about being just in the proximity of a doctor that was supposed to be of a positive influence. And I mean, so many people were so sick that when they saw a doctor coming, everybody wanted to see the doctor at once. And of course, there's only one doctor, so, you know, you have to wait your turn. But so many people were losing their families and their children and, you know, whatever. And yeah, so they basically pushed them away with that staff. Then the wax substance that they actually put on the gowns served as almost a barrier, because the liquid wouldn't permeate it. It would just run off. Mm-hmm. So they essentially, you know, they probably saved a lot of lives of the doctors that were going around, because, you know, they couldn't get sick unless they took off the mask in the presence of somebody else and somebody coughed on them and, you know, they got sick. But yeah, I mean, as for the miasma, it was a bit of a miss, medically speaking. Although I'm sure that all of the rotting corpses being thrown into the street and picked up in wagons to be burned didn't smell too appealing. So it probably didn't add to the good air, bad air theory. Really too bad that they didn't have Febreze back then, because, you know, they could have just Febrezed it and been like, there you go, all fixed. No more bad air. We Febrezed the shit out of that. All right. Wow. So before we fall asleep.
Yeah.
is there anything else we have to add? I think the only other thing that I wanted to add was to be sure that you guys are subscribing. Go to iTunes and actually click that subscribe button so that whenever we have a new episode that comes out, it will automatically start downloading onto your device. Also, be sure to check out the blog. The blog updates every 2 weeks on Tuesday. I usually try to get it out on Monday, just because a lot of you guys, I feel like you need kind of a break on a Monday for a little bit of creepy goodness. So I try to get that done over the weekend and then have it upload on Monday. So yeah, other than that, I don't think there's anything else that we have to add. It's going to be a pretty quiet week for me coming up. I got a little bit of extra time off, so
that's nice.
Yeah, it should be nice. I'll work on my novels a little bit, I think.
Good.
Yeah, how about you?
I'm going to New York for Passover.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
To visit my aunt.
Yeah, just my stay kid. Out of the subway.
Yeah. Not even going into the city, I don't think, so.
There you go. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that is it for us. Thank you ever so much for listening. We really appreciate you. Be sure to send us your favorite creepy stories, your favorite folklore tales. Make sure that you do hit that subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes. Just take a moment to give us, a few stars. Let us know what we're doing right, what we can improve on. Because that's, pertinent information. We like that information. So, and again, if you have any topics for us that you would like us to cover, shoot those to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. Yeah, so until next time, I am Janine Mercer, signing off.
And I am Steven, signing off. Peace out.
And as always, guys, stay spooky. And now we can go to fuck to bed. Jesus. So when I die, I want to be laid out in the finals. I want a black sportcoat there, Stetson hat. I want a $20 gold piece on my watch chain, so the boys will know that I died standing pat. I went down to St. James. Infirmary. You know I saw my
stretched out on that long table.